The original podcast was recorded in German. This podcast was translated using artificial intelligence. Burn Rate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister.
Hello and welcome to Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. I'm here with Guy Jofredi to talk about the startup scene with a special focus on venture capital. With episode 58, we're already kicking off the third season of Burn Rate. We're recording this on Wednesday, August 13th at 9 p.m. This podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, the Upscaler Program. Today, in our main topic, we're covering part two of our four-part series on the Upscaler Program, and our guest is Peter Staley, the program's head. Before we dive in, we'd like to share some changes we'll be rolling out. Over the summer break, we've been thinking about how to improve the show, and we're excited to introduce these updates gradually over the coming weeks. First and foremost, we have to announce, with a heavy heart, that our co-host, Maximilian Bölk, has decided to step back from Burn Rate. This is due to work commitments. He's currently extremely busy at his job and wants to focus on that. We fully understand this decision, but of course, we'll miss Maximilian's voice and expertise. We hope he'll return to the hosting team at some point in the future. Now, the first episode of each month will be dedicated to the top deals of the previous month. We'll pick what we think are the three most exciting transactions and discuss them in depth. In addition, we'll now start the episodes with the deals of the week, short updates on notable transactions we want to highlight. And finally, for our main topics, we'll occasionally have guests joining us on the show. So what's on today's agenda?
Like you said, we'll start with the deals of the week. Today, we've got the exit of Didelayan and the funding rounds for Creel and Modulos. In the news segment, we'll look at the state of the Swiss startup ecosystem in the first half of 2025, putting it in a global context. We'll also talk about VC fundraising in the US and a planned microchip factory in Switzerland. For the main topic, as you mentioned, we have Peter Staley joining us to focus on the role of the experts in the Upscaler program, part two of our series. And at the end, we have a listener question from Tobias, who wants to know how founders should prepare for meetings with investors.
Perfect. As announced earlier, we'll start with the regular Deals of the Week segment. A lot happened in Switzerland over the summer break, so we've got plenty lined up here. Let's kick it off with what I'd call the exit of the summer. Destinus is acquiring Didelayan for 180 million Swiss francs. The European unmanned aerial vehicle manufacturer is buying the Zurich-based aviation AI startup in a cash and stock deal worth about $225 million. The acquisition is expected to close by the end of 2025. We won't go too deep into the details here, but my question to you, what makes Didelayan attractive for Destinus?
Didelayan is seen as a pioneer in certifiable AI avionics software that enables autonomous flying without relying on GPS, focusing instead on visual object recognition. The company was founded in 2016 and now has a team of over 150 specialists, bringing deep expertise in AI, machine learning, and aeronautical engineering. They've already carried out the first autonomous flights using their technology. For Destinus, a scale-up now headquartered in the Netherlands, founded in 2021, this is an excellent fit. Destinus develops aircraft and drone systems for both civilian and military use, and their drones have already been spotted in Ukraine. By integrating Didelayan, they want to strengthen their AI capabilities for unmanned flight systems. One key question that remains is how much of this deal was cash and how much was an equity swap?
Yeah, good question. Maybe something for our monthly deal review. Who knows? Let's move on to the second transaction. Lausanne-based Creal, a Swiss pioneer in light field display technology, has closed a funding round of just under $9 million, led by optics giant Zeiss. Creal's technology projects digital images with real depth and supports the humanized natural focus mechanism. The aim is to create healthier, more comfortable AR experiences and a new platform for vision care. Zeiss isn't just an investor, they're also a strategic partner. How does that change Creel's chances of success in your view?
A strategic partner like Zeiss can be a real game changer for Creel. They bring not only capital, but also decades of experience in optics, access to global distribution channels, and of course, strong market credibility. Creel used to focus mainly on AR glasses, but they now have a new goal, bringing their technology into medical products. In that space, having Zeiss, an industry leader, as a partner is hugely valuable for building trust with potential customers quickly. This collaboration will also give Creel more real-world application experience with their technology, and they can use the medical sector as a kind of budget market to refine the tech before targeting the mass AR glasses market.
Now to the last deal, Zurich-based Modulos has raised a solid 8.7 million Swiss francs in a pre-series A round. Modulos develops a platform that helps companies comply with new and complex AI regulations, such as the EU AI Act, which comes into force in August 2026. The platform ensures that AI systems meet legal requirements without slowing down innovation. I think it's a very timely and relevant topic, something we've discussed before on Burn Rate. How do you rate Modulos' chances, Guy?
Well, Modulos already has several customers, unfortunately, we can't name them, who are actively preparing for the new regulations using their platform. They're positioned a bit differently from most AI compliance startups. They aim to offer a complete compliance solution, covering not just the EU AI Act, but also other global standards. That sets them apart from competitors. If they can successfully deliver on this unique selling point, they could grow quickly. It makes sense for customers to work with a single provider that covers all AI compliance needs, rather than buying separate solutions for each tool. The key now is for Modulos to scale internationally and not remain focused solely on the Swiss market.
Since our last episode, there have been quite a few other interesting transactions we didn't cover today, but they'll be in our weekly newsletter starting again next Monday. And remember, we just discussed three deals briefly. If you'd like any of them covered in more detail in our monthly review, let us know. That's how we decide which cases to dive deeper into. So, on to the news of the week. According to the latest mid-year update of the Swiss Venture Capital Report, investments in Swiss startups rose by about 36% in the first half of 2025, reaching 1.47 billion Swiss francs. That's stronger growth than in many other European countries where the recovery was more moderate. Germany was also up, while France and the UK saw declines. Switzerland is in the upper midfield globally, behind the US, where a few very large deals pushed the total up, and Israel, which also posted solid growth after a tough period due to the war. However, we're seeing the same trend as globally. The number of rounds has dropped from 138 to 124. Capital is concentrating in fewer deals, mostly in later stages or capital-intensive sectors. In the US, the same pattern holds: fewer deals, but much larger tickets, especially in AI, climate tech, and biotech. In Switzerland, biotech dominates, a record 705 million francs, while ICT grew 86% and fintech 93%. In the US and UK, the boom is more AI-driven. In Asia, we're seeing a shift toward climate tech and industrial automation. This shows how much the Swiss numbers are shaped by a single sector and how dependent the overall picture is on a few mega deals. At the same time, there's a structural weakness, also a global issue, in late-stage funding. In Switzerland, late-stage volumes dipped slightly, similar to continental Europe. In the US, by contrast, growth rounds picked up again thanks to a stronger IPO window and more secondary deals. Just last week, for example, Figma went public. Last but not least, sentiment is mixed. Many investors are optimistic, but nearly half expect further valuation corrections, something we're also seeing in international surveys. That makes strategic burn rate management even more important for startups. And that's exactly what we're talking about today with Guy. How should founders position themselves in an environment where capital is selective and the road to the next round might be longer? The main challenge: a shortage of growth capital, especially for late stage rounds, combined with fewer exits. That means many startups will have to extend their runway. My question to you: what creative or practical strategies do you currently see for Swiss startups to make it through this phase?
Yeah, extending runway is definitely a core topic for many Swiss startups. And honestly, it has been since 2023. We've seen plenty of creative approaches, but in reality, there are three main ways to do it. On the operational side, it's about reducing burn rate, so lowering cash outflow, and increasing revenue or improving margins. On the strategic side, you can, of course, raise more capital. For successful teams, I often see a combination. First, they extend runway through extremely strict cost management. That means cutting any non-essential expenses that aren't critical to growth or hitting milestones. In this critical phase, no salary increases, and if necessary, founders delay their own salaries until after the next round. They believe in the business and work for their equity. Then I often see a sharper focus on customers, targeting high-margin segments and or those with short sales cycles, picking the low-hanging fruit. At the same time, they look for new funding sources, grants, investments from strategic partners or suppliers. Sometimes it even goes as far as work for equity arrangements, where external service providers take equity instead of cash for their work. Personally, I'm cautious about that. I'm not always convinced you'll get the best quality work, and it might cause more problems long-term than the short-term benefit you gain. Then there are bridge financings. Most often, we see existing investors providing those, often with attractive terms, a low cap for the next round, and a decent discount, typically around 20%. The key is realistic planning of your capital needs and starting investor conversations early, whether it's with existing investors for a bridge or with new ones for the next round, so you know exactly which milestones you need to hit. If you act proactively, you increase your chances of getting to the next round with less pressure and on better terms.
For me, there's always a kind of test moment. I'll say to founders, hey, you need to go without salary for 3 months. Some are shocked. That's not possible. And then I want to find out why. If someone has a family and kids to support, I understand. Even then, we can usually find solutions. But if you're fresh out of university, no fixed costs, and still insisting on an 8K salary, that surprises me. It's a good opportunity to push back and say, nope, for the next 3 months, no salary. And I'm always curious to see how founders react in that situation.
Exactly. And you made an important point. Often it's not salary forfeiture, it's salary deferral. And in that case, there's usually a workable solution.
Right. In reality, it's never truly forfeiture. If it is, then you usually compensate with shares. Most often, as you say, it's deferral. And you can even sweeten that. For example, agree to 3 months of deferred salary, but promise a salary bump after the next financing or some other perk. It's give and take. But my expectation is that founders take responsibility and actively try to extend the company's runway. That obviously doesn't work if the CEO is a hired manager with only a tiny equity stake. Then there's no incentive. That's why these situations are so telling about a founder's DNA. Okay, on to the second news item. I came across a PitchBook study showing that in the first half of 2025, the US venture capital market has become extremely concentrated. 12 funds captured more than half of all VC capital raised. That's wild. At the top is Founders Fund, Peter Thiel's fund. This trend means fewer but extremely well-capitalized players dominate the market. It's the classic power law. Smaller and newer funds are losing ground. For founders, that can mean capital access depends even more on a few relationships and a strong narrative. If you don't make it into the big funds, you may have to rely on alternative funding sources, international markets, or strategic partnerships. The question is, will we see the same dynamics in Europe and Switzerland? And what does that mean for our startups? Guy, what does this extreme capital concentration in the US mean for startups, both there and here in Switzerland? And how should founders adjust their fundraising strategies in terms of investor selection, internationalization, or timing?
Yeah, that's a big set of questions. Let's start with the US capital concentration. Like you said, a handful of funds control huge amounts of capital. And if you want a big, high-profile mega round, you need a ticket from one of them. If you can't get in, you have to think smaller. The US still has thousands of smaller VCs and angels. Maybe a bit less capital than before, maybe lower valuations. But you can still build a company capital efficiently. It's no longer growth at any cost. You know, there's still a good chance for companies to succeed there. And keep in mind, those giant funds are often focused on later stage mega deals. Yes, we've seen a few exceptions where they've written billion-dollar checks in early stages, but that's rare. So I don't think the VC system in the US is broken, even if the numbers look extreme. Now, back to Switzerland. Do these US trends spill over here? Not really in the same way. Yes, we see the same usual suspects like Sequoia or a 16Z investing here occasionally, plus smaller funds with the Swiss focus. But I don't think early-stage Swiss founders looking for US money will see much change. Here in Switzerland, there's no such clear dominance by a few funds. The ecosystem is smaller, with far less capital overall, and much depends on personal networks and the specific USP of a fund. And unlike in the US, you know, we lack large institutional investors that could create that kind of capital concentration. For founders, as always, fundraising should be planned strategically. Connect early with relevant investors and always have backup options if your lead drops out. And time your round carefully. Don't try to close during slow periods like summer vacation.
Okay, so on August 1st, I spotted a Swiss news item on Bloomberg that really caught my attention. There's a remarkable joint effort taking shape here. ETH, MPay, and SwissMem are working together to establish a chip fab lab, basically a specialized chip fabrication facility, at the Innovation Park in Dubendorf. The plan includes a clean room of around 4,000 square meters with mini production infrastructure and an investment volume between 100 and 300 million Swiss francs. The project is slated to launch by 2028. Here's the interesting twist. They're in talks with international industry partners like Rheinmetall and Thales to develop dual-use chips, meaning chips for both civilian and military applications. That's a clear signal. Switzerland isn't aiming for mass production, but rather highly specialized chips with strategic importance. Guy, what does this kind of specialized chip fab, developed by academic institutions together with industry partners like Rheinmetall, mean for Switzerland's tech ecosystem?
Well, it's obviously not competition for the multi-billion fabs in Taiwan, the US, or South Korea, but it's a targeted competence center with real strategic importance for Switzerland and for Europe. I think that makes it extremely exciting. ETH, EPFL, EMPA, and SwissMem already have multiple research groups working on novel chip technologies, and they're among the best in the world in their fields. If this project speeds up prototyping and shortens development cycles, it could be a real game changer for Swiss deep tech companies in the microchip space. The combination of academic research and industry partners like Rheinmetall and Thales ensures that development stays close to real-world applications, including in security-sensitive use cases. If the project happens, it would be a huge boost for Swiss startups and scale-ups in deep tech.
Want to scale your startup quickly and successfully, not just grow? Then the Upscaler program is for you. It gives you access to our extensive network of founders, entrepreneurs, and the right investors. Over 50 startups have already benefited from more than 500 workshops, scaling their businesses nationally and internationally. Want to take advantage of this personal tailored support? All the info is at www.upscaler.ch.
All right, let's get to today's main topic. We're continuing our series on the Upscaler program with Peter Staley. Back in episode 54, we took a deep dive into what Upscaler is, a highly intensive two-year growth program that helps startups take their next big leap forward. Unlike traditional coaching programs, Upscaler relies on experienced entrepreneurs, people who don't just give advice, but actively work on the startup's key growth factors. Expert teams are tailored to each company, adapt dynamically to its challenges, and bring not just know-how, but also their personal networks, opening doors to investors, partners, even customers. The focus is always on sustainable growth. Today, we're zooming in on the role of the program's experts. But let's start with a quick recap for anyone who missed the earlier episode. Peter, how would you describe Upscaler in three sentences? And what makes it different from other startup support programs?
Thanks. Our Upscaler program is unique in Switzerland and helps startups scale to international markets faster and more successfully. The sweet spot is right when they're starting their international expansion. With our support, they should need less growth and risk capital, meaning less dilution for founders and investors, and they can achieve a much higher enterprise valuation in a shorter period. The program is open to startups with a clear internationalization strategy, at least 500,000 in revenue, and a team of at least 10 people. What makes Upscaler different is that it's the only program in Switzerland where a startup gets personal, tailored, and hands-on support from experienced entrepreneurs and serial founders for 2 years straight. We're open to all industries, except ones like biotech, which have completely different timelines. 2 years of support makes little sense when your product takes 10 years to reach market.
You mentioned that Upscaler's experts aren't typical coaches. They're experienced founders themselves. Why is that so crucial for success?
Because they bring skills and experience that young teams, often scaling for the first time, don't have yet. Our experts have gone through scaling multiple times and can help avoid mistakes and accelerate growth. Their support is concrete, impact-focused, and far more hands-on than the generalist approach you often see in other programs.
And you've said it's not coaching, but challenging. Can you give an example of what that looks like?
Sure. In coaching, you often hear a lot of could and might. We prefer to dig deep, for example, into the business model. Founders can usually explain theirs well, but we'll keep asking until we're convinced it's the best model for rapid growth and high margins. Not just in the home market, but in the target international market. Often that means adapting the model. Then we drill down into the value proposition, sometimes even following the chain from a B2B customer to their end customers. That level of detail is rarely addressed by an advisory board or a board of directors, but it's central in our program.
When a scale-up joins Upscaler, how do you put the expert team together? And does the lineup change over the 2 years?
We build teams based on the startup's specific challenges. For example, if a startup is expanding into the DACH region and needs a distribution strategy, we'll bring in experts with relevant experience. If later they have tax or transfer pricing questions, we'll adjust the team accordingly. That dynamic, tailored approach is rare, and it's even caught the interest of the European Institute of Innovation and Technology, which wants to discuss our model.
And you keep one or two experts throughout the 2 years for continuity, right?
Exactly. That ensures no information gets lost and we don't waste time revisiting old ground. The worst thing would be for a startup to feel we're wasting their time.
Now, the experts are sharing their personal networks quite openly with investors, strategic partners, even though they're not usually invested in the startups. How do you get them to do that?
We're lucky. All our experts are intrinsically motivated. They've been at the start of their own entrepreneurial journeys, so they know what it's like. They're happy to pass on their experience, knowledge, and networks to the next generation.
And after those intensive workshops, what does follow-up look like? Do the experts work operationally inside the startup, or is it mainly strategic support?
It's not operational day-to-day work, but our experts do act as door openers to investors, customers, suppliers, and they're available for calls or advice between workshops. Continuous exchange is key because sometimes there are weeks or months between sessions.
And how do you ensure the impact is long-lasting, not just short-term?
The two-year duration already helps create a bigger, more lasting impact than short programs. Personally, I sometimes keep helping founders even after they graduate. But of course, there's no guarantee of long-term success. Too many factors are beyond our control. And
Peter Stolle, thanks for joining us on Burn Rate.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
All right. On to this week's listener question from Tobias in Lucerne. He has his very first meeting with an investor coming up and wants to know, what should I prepare to make the conversation go really well?
Great question, Tobias, and a classic. We won't talk about documents like the perfect pitch deck or financial plan. Instead, let's focus on researching the investor. Don't just know their name, find out which sectors they invest in, what stage they usually come in, and what deals they've done in the last few years. That gives you solid hooks to connect your pitch to.
Yes, and go deeper than just the investor's website. Read press articles, listen to podcasts they've been on. Sometimes they'll say outright what matters most to them. Team, market size, tech, whatever it is, you can highlight that in your pitch. Also, look at their portfolio and reach out to founders they've invested in. I tell startups pitching to our fund, go talk to other founders we've backed. It's the best way to get a transparent picture, both good and bad.
Exactly. And here's my second tip. Before the pitch, think about the likely questions you'll get, like how do you make money? How big is the market? What makes you different? How will you use this capital and how long will it last? have short, clear answers ready.
And practice with a real person, not a teddy bear. Have someone grill you with tough questions until you're unshakable. We call it nasty question management. Make a list of the 100 nastiest questions that could come up and prepare answers.
Great term, nasty question management. You could even ask ChatGPT to generate 50 nasty questions based on your pitch. And one more tip, know exactly what you want from the meeting. Is it a commitment or just interest and a second meeting? The clearer your goal, the better you can steer the conversation.
And finally, follow up quickly. Ideally, have your follow-up email drafted before the meeting so you can send it within minutes, adding a line or two that references the conversation. I've had founders do that, and it made a huge impression. At the latest, send it within 12 hours.
So to sum it up, Tobias, research your investor thoroughly, train your pitch and answers, set clear goals for the conversation, and have your follow-up ready to go.
And remember, the first meeting is rarely the final decision. It's the start of a relationship. Stay authentic, listen well, and show that you understand the investor. Good luck, Tobias. That's it for this first post-summer episode of Burn Rate. If you'd like to support the podcast, subscribe to our newsletter and share it with your network. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Take care and goodbye.